shop online and then here.
Well, the central library is reopened.
That's great. I read about that.
Not a book, sir, Daddy. Mommy. There's probably some NSA. There's probably some NSA people buy hard drives that's got save my information. All right, I've said enough.
She's good. This is the November 2nd, 2022 morning session of the Portland City Council. Good morning, Megan. Before we call the roll, I just want to note that Commissioner Hardesty is remote today. We didn't. Oh, Commissioner Hardesty, you have your hand up. Yes.
Thank you, President Matz. Yes, I just want to say that I am going to be remote this morning, but will be in person this afternoon.
Great, thank you. And with that noted, Megan, can you please call the roll?
Matz.
Here.
Rubio.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty.
Here.
Wheeler.
All right, now we will turn it over to legal counsel for the rules of order and decorum.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the Portland City Council. City Council is holding hybrid public meetings with in-person attendance in addition to electronic attendance. If you wish to testify before council in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance by visiting the council agenda on council clerk's webpage at www.portland.gov/council/agenda. You may sign up for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions, reports, or first readings of ordinances. Written testimony may be submitted at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. For testifiers joining virtually, please unmute yourself once the council clerk calls your name. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during city council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. A timer will indicate when your time is done. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, council may take a short recess and reconvene virtually. Thank you.
Thank you. First up is communications, item 906, please. Megan, please read this item title.
Request of Robert Butler to address council regarding lack of traffic enforcement.
Welcome, Robert.
Hi, Robert's still on his way. There is a huge traffic on Division Street. Is it okay if I'll start?
Clerk, what do we do in this situation?
We can move forward to item 907.
Okay, why don't we go to 907 and we'll come back to 906. Welcome. Name for the record, please.
Thank you.
Read the item into the record.
Oh, of course.
Thank you. Request of Fatima Magnadova to address council regarding crashes and Southeast Division Street project.
Good morning, honorable commissioners. I'm Fatima Magomadova, owner of Roman Russian Food Store, here to address ongoing safety concerns on Division Street. It is very sad change of events where PBOT went underground from public participation on Division Street project. And it is very sad that no one on the city council helped nor participated to solve city imposed difficulties on this chaotic Division Street project. Division Street is a confusing disaster. Our customers continually complain about this disaster, and it's far worse at night when you drive in the rain at dark and you cannot see which U-turn you're supposed to take. If you take U-turn in the wrong place, you can end up in the head-on crash. Worst yet, think about when there is a snow on Division Street. Our store is open until 11 p.m. at night. And we have even more safety problems because it's very difficult to see at night which U-turns can safely be taken. My customers tell me, I kept driving and looking for U-turn until I found myself approaching freeway and I gave up and drove off. This is not only safety concerns, but also it hurts the revenues for the store. Another problem we're dealing with is lack of parking. We were giving only two parking stalls at our curb instead of four that we used to have before. I hear every day customers complaining that it's too confusing and there is no street parking when they get to the store. Another concern I have, why engineers didn't consider the needs of our trucking access? Why there was no design or provisions to be made for trucks to best make turns? Yet bicycles have the upper hand over cars, making cars do all the detours. Worse yet, the bicycles' curbs are getting on the way of traffic and increasing crashes. Why not bicycles take some detours for safety reasons? Why do we not detour them to safer and lower traffic streets? For example, Clinton Street, that is parallel to Division. It would be perfectly working for bikes if the city would complete Clinton Street, where Clinton is now a dirt road. The loss of curbside parking with parking stalls moved away from the curb makes it more difficult to safely park. You can't see the parking lines while in your car. Sometimes you have to get out of the car and walk around to see if the car is within the striping. This walking around is very unsafe. Now, 20 city council presentations later, why don't anyone at this city council do anything to provide alternatives to our problem? And why is it now the city council acts like it's not interested in what public has to say, contrary to what city council wants to do? It is time to turn this disaster around, do something about it, and show us that you care. Thank you.
Thank you. Megan, can you read item 90? Right. Should we proceed in numerical order and then come back to Robert at the end? All right, Robert, we'll ask you to be patient and we will continue to 908, please.
Request of Ted Harvey to address council regarding experience working as a concrete finisher.
Welcome, Ted. Hi, you can come on up, sit at the counter.
Pardon me? Okay, thank you.
Hi, Ted.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thank you.
How about you? Thanks for coming in person today.
This isn't rain, this is sweat.
don't worry about it, we're friendly here.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Mayor, and good morning, commissioners. My name is Ted Harvey. I'm a union member of Laborers 43 and a lead concrete finisher with the city of Portland. I have worked for the city for almost 21 years. The city of Portland is the best job I've ever had. Our main focus is ADA compliant corners. Our work has meaning and value by improving the lives of our most vulnerable and marginalized community members. ADA creates access to neighborhoods where there isn't any for the sight impaired, blind, people in wheelchairs, citizens with canes, and walkers. ADA fosters independence and creates the ability to access stores, markets, join community activities, and attend religious services without feeling like a burden to family and friends. We will all be there someday and we'll appreciate the accessibility that this provides. No matter what neighborhood we work in, people thank us for the work we do and what it means to them and how it connects their community together. Around 5 years ago, the city entered into a settlement with a Cree conglomeration, and we have a mandate now of 1,500 ADA ramps a year citywide. BOM is responsible for 600 ramps a year. If we don't meet our numbers, we are sued or fined. That puts a tremendous amount of pressure on us to succeed, and we are the best at what we do. We have the highest compliance rate of any city on the West Coast at around 95 to 98%. They currently are asking us now to train private contractors that do the EDAs for the city, and they get paid $4 to $6 an hour more than us to train, to help train them. This is due in large to many of our finishers have 3,000 to over 10,000 corners completed. I have over 10,000 corners completed, whether I form or pour. So with that kind of an experience, we have the most experience of anybody in this city constructing ADA corners. We are also asked to fill in as upgrade supervising, and we also design corners. So some of our corner designs, this is what we called field engineering. That was before Creek. This is after Creek. Everything's in tens and hundreds now that we have to comply by, which is very difficult because concrete is a plastic substance that goes hard and we have to hurry up and get it done. So it's a they did a study and we have the 98% compliance rate in the West Coast. There's no other city that has a higher compliance rate than us. So we're also asked to fill in as upgrade supervising, design corners, and inspections. Tara Wasiak, who was our group manager, asked me to write an SOP for our section during COVID so we could continue providing our level of service needed for the pandemic. We are currently negotiating for a contract, and we are paid at least of any finisher in the comparable study. Basically, we're at $35.70 an hour, and the city of Tacoma, Sacramento, they're all at $40. An hour, just short. We can't hire people. We just had a hiring. We had four people apply, two no-showed, and two we're going to hire, but they're not the level of finishers that we needed. When I applied 21 years ago, there's 103. Dang, didn't get all of it.
Commissioner Hardesty, yes, please.
Thank you. I don't think our speaker had a lot more to say, and I would love him to have the opportunity to finish if it's okay with council.
Absolutely. Yeah. Ted, if you have any finishing thoughts, we'd love
yes,
to hear it.
Thank you so much. So we've lost five finishers in the last 2 to 3 years due to low wages, and basically, the private sector is so far ahead of us. When I started here 21 years ago, we were comparable in wages, and our benefits just blew everybody away. This is like working in the land of Oz. That's why I loved working for the city. It was the best job I ever had. And now the private contractors, to be able to compete with each other and with the city, now their benefits are basically pretty much the same as us. And now their wages have gone up to 40, to City of Sacramento is just a penny or two under 43 an hour. We cannot hire people at $35.70 an hour, which is what our current wage. I talked to the supervisor up in Tacoma he runs all of their concrete in the city of Tacoma. They pay $40 an hour. And he said that they've had finisher openings for 3 years. They just hired one because that's all applicants they got. They said nobody will work at $40 an hour doing concrete now. I feel like I'm like the Chamberlain and Russell, because when I started it was $250 an hour and finishers were at $10 an hour, right? Yeah. And now finishers are making $100,000 a year now. $100,000 a year. I could never in my life ever believe that somebody could get paid so much money to finish concrete, but that's the way it is right now. So we would like to maintain just the level of professionalism that we do for the city. We are the best. We want to continue to be the best. And to be able to do that, we hire journeyman finishers and we bring them in because ADA is a specific skill set. Nobody has to do that on the private sector. I can pour floors and patios and sidewalks, and I do all kinds of finishes, but ADA with our ramps, continually changing the specs on the scope of what we do. These things go up and down and over, and these have to be right on the numbers. They have to be perfect, because if we're over this much, they will negate this and they'll tell us to either grind it or we have to take it out. And that's why most private contractors, they bid twice.
Excuse me, Ted. I thought you were going to finish reading your letter, and I was going to let
sorry.
You.
Oh, sorry. Well, it is part of it. I'm trying to shorten my letter. I'm sorry.
It's but anyway, okay.
Just in short, we can't make a profit. You guys get it at cost, and private contractors bid them twice. So it's an incredible amount of savings that we have towards the city, and then also we would like to still continue our level of service that we provide for the public. So I'm sorry.
Great. Ted, thank you for your testimony, and thank you for your service to our city.
Those were the exact words I was going to say as well, Mr. President. Thank you.
Great. Megan, can you read the next communications item?
Item 909, request of Ryan McConnell to address council regarding more jobs and attracting wider industries for downtown.
Welcome, Ryan. Is Ryan online?
It doesn't appear so. I think Ryan was supposed to attend in person.
Okay, let's go to 910.
Request of Tim Sessler to address council regarding work contribution to the city.
Welcome, Tim. Is Tim online?
Tim, are you able to unmute?
Hello.
Hi, Tim.
Good morning.
Well, hi, Tim. You have, we can hear you loud and clear. You're welcome to begin your testimony.
Okay. My name is Tim Sessler, and I'm the only person filling the only machinist position that exists in the city's schedule of job classifications. This position has historically been tied with that of the other classifications that exist only at the Bureau of Environmental Services. The wastewater operator, millwright, and machinists are all lumped together and receive the same rate of pay, even though the skill sets required for each job classification are vastly different. The machinist position requires extensive knowledge of the manufacturing process to be able to achieve viable, reliable, and efficient repair to component parts. This position also requires a deeply rooted knowledge of metallurgy for choosing the appropriate materials to be used to manufacture component parts from. Corrosion and chemical resistance must be considered, as well as whether it will have the strength needed for the application. This position is that of an essential employee who is required to report to work even during adverse weather when many other bureaus shut down or open late. When the pandemic hit, we were some of the first to return to work at the treatment plant. This job cannot be done remotely and requires me to be on site every day to provide the services that I provide. This position is involved in collaborative work with the technicians from other crafts to support their core work and help them streamline and simplify some of their work by designing and manufacturing tools for them or modifying existing equipment to simplify how they deal with maintaining it. In addition to the normal repair machining work done by this position, as the major core function is to design and make changes to equipment that improves reliability and reduces failures. Oftentimes improving reliability to the point where only oil changes and replacing normal wear items are needed. This position keeps process equipment viable and running instead of being replaced by utilizing the knowledge of manufacturing to be able to produce parts that are no longer available. When manufacturers have deemed them obsolete, have issues with their own manufacturing processes, or with the recent supply chain issues caused by the pandemic. To stay current with modern manufacturing techniques and processes, I've spent hundreds of hours of my own time taking evening classes at local community colleges, utilizing the tuition reimbursement program that requires me to pay for the classes out of pocket until I complete and receive a passing grade. I've acquired various skills from welding aircraft grade alloys using modern processes to computer-aided design and drafting, to most recently using modern 3D modeling and CAD/CAM system software with the goal of being as efficient at my job as technologies available to me can allow me to be, since I'm the only machinist. The city has The city has benefited more from these additional skills than I have since I've not earned any additional pay for them. The wage increase being asked for by the union for this position is supported by my direct supervisor, along with the division manager, and even our previous bureau director, all said they were in support of this position, finally receiving a fair, far overdue and deserved pay increase above and outside whatever the cost of living is negotiated. When you consider this position, it is the single class that exists in only one city bureau and is filled by one person. So this wage increase is not going to be a huge cost to the city over several bureaus and work sites. The wage increase is being bargained for to finally recognize the value of the work that this position provides to the city. I want you to know that this position is paid from a minimum of 10% to as much as 68% less than other similar municipalities pay for the same level of skill. And now with inflation hitting record levels, I have for all intended purposes taken a pay cut. It's way past time for the city to recognize the value this position provides to the city for the level of skill and experience it takes to provide this job and take an honest look at the facts regarding what other municipal wastewater treatment plants pay their machinists. I've made these comparable positions available in a spreadsheet in order to support my statements about my compensation. It contains links to the job.
Tim, thank you so much for that testimony. You were about a minute over. I heard you, though, and I will let you know. I will have my staff follow up on this issue, and we will get educated on it. I appreciate your testimony today, and I appreciate your service to the city and the bureau I oversee. With that, Megan, do we have Robert here for 906?
We do.
Yes. Yes, he's here. Here, guilty.
Robert, I'm going to read it into the record real quick. 906, request of Robert Butler to address council regarding lack of traffic enforcement.
Good morning, everybody.
Hi, Robert.
Members of the city council, underpaid, overworked. This is Robert Butler, resident of Portland. I'm going to talk about traffic enforcement, but I will say that somebody has increased the traffic enforcement from zero to something that we can see. And so that's, I hope we haven't offended or created problems elsewhere, but I can see the difference.
Great.
So I'm going to start out with a couple of updates. As I started 2 months ago, what is missing? It's the no left turn sign. Told you that a month ago. This is a death trap. BBOT is absolutely negligent, totally negligent. I hate to tell you, I would say it's at the point now that if someone gets killed on a left turn there, it's manslaughter. Okay. There's a store on Division, major retailer and Division Furniture and Stereo and whatnot. The owner called me up 3 days ago and said, I know you've worked in the community about concerns on Division. I have to tell you now, we are closing our business on December 1st. But what happened on Division Street was pivotal in our decision in retail. Another person last week was Sarah Pearson from the pawn shop. She was in her car trying to make her first ever testimony to city council. And after her complaining, the response from Commissioner Hardesty was, what we're trying to do on Division is change behavior. And that is the justification for what's happening on Division. Well, changing behavior is something that's pretty amazing to do. Science has been unable to do that very well. And to change the behavior of 30,000 drivers per day, I would say that's not gonna work. So the purpose, my concern is that we got to get to reality here. Judgment is only as good as our information. We're denying the information and replacing ideology about climate control and unusual ideas for transportation. So in the meantime, I would suggest if you're driving, particularly with your family, do not drive on Division unless you have to, and be very careful if you drive on Division at night that you're really taking a risk in your hand for someone taking a wrong left turn and crashing right into you. That's it.
Thank you, Robert. And I see Commissioner Hardesty has her hand up. Commissioner Hardesty.
Mr. Butler, you're done. I have nothing to say to you. This is for my colleagues. Thank you.
I want my colleagues to know that unfortunately,
someone lost their life on Southeast Division over the weekend, who was a bicyclist. And it appears that the investigation is ongoing, but it appears that the bicyclist may have ran the light. It appears that weather may have been a factor. And what I know for sure is that the investigation is continuing. And so I want to be really clear. We are changing behavior because automobiles should not continue to run into people. Period. And it must be safe for pedestrians and all modes of transportation. And so I just did not want Mr. Butler's testimony to stay on the record as if it was factual information. For more information, I would wait until the investigation has been concluded, and then it will be a public document. And as we also know, the federal discrimination complaint was found unfounded and dismissed by Mr. Butler and company. So, they can come every month and try to provide misinformation, but my job is to save lives on Division. And that's what we as a council have made a commitment to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Megan, does that conclude our communications for today?
It does.
Great. Colleagues, next we will go to our first time certain item, 9-11, which is scheduled for 9:45. Megan, please read the title for 9-11.
Authorize applications to the U.S. Department of Transportation and U.S. Department of Energy for grants to accelerate transportation decarbonization not to exceed $4 million.
Commissioner Hardesty, I believe this is your item.
That is correct. I have able spokespeople from the Bureau of Transportation to tell you why we think we are very well positioned to acquire this federal grant. I cannot see the screen because who's here from PMOT?
I think we might have Kristen, Jacob, and Ingrid.
Thank you all for being here. Take it away.
Commissioner Hardesty, before we start, this is Kristen Hull, the Planning Division Manager. Would you mind reading the amendment that we provided? Or if you don't have it, I can help out.
Oh, yes. I forgot about that minor detail. Hold for just a sec.
Kristen, do you have the amendment?
I do have the language. Okay, I'm ready. I would like to read into the record an amendment for the ordinance not to exceed $5.5 million in total funding instead of the current not to exceed $4 million amount. Because bureaus have been working hard finalizing the grant submission, we wanted to make sure that we would pursue the full amount needed for these grants. And therefore, I move to amend the title ordinance to read, authorize application to U.S. Department of Transportation and the U.S. Department of Energy for two grants not to exceed $5.5 million to
support
transportation electrification. And I move to amend section 1, item 8 to read, for the park and charge grant, local matching funds of no less than $750,000 will be provided from private sector partners, including but not limited to Portland General Electric and Pacific. And finally, I move to amend section A to read, the mayor is hereby authorized to make applications for grants in the amount of up to $5.5 million to the U.S. Department of Energy and U.S. Department of Transportation. Can I get a second?
Second.
Megan, do we do the roll call now on the amendments?
We can do that, yes?
Yeah, why don't we do the roll call now on the amendments, and then we'll hear about this presentation and take or this ordinance and take public testimony. Let's call the roll.
Rubio?
Or sure, Commissioner Ryan, do you want to have some discussion on the amendment?
Yeah, so first I've heard about them, so I wanted to just hear a little bit more
sure.
about the amendments from those who brought it to the dais.
Sure. Do you want to pose a question to staff?
Well, I know that we specifically called out some of the private partners. PGU is the one I just recall hearing. So were they consulted? I just need to know that.
Sure. I would ask.
At starters.
So let me, I can answer that, Commissioner, if you'd like. Or the good news is that our partners came up with more money. Right. So they're investing their resources as well. And we did not want to lose the opportunity to have them put more money into this effort.
Well, that was compelling. Thank you. Good to hear that at this moment.
Any further discussion on the amendments? Or actually, let me ask staff. Staff, would you like to elaborate on the origin of these amendments and what they're intended to do?
Commissioner Hardesty got it right, which is that we are really just upping the total amount of the grants to maximize the grant request based on the ability to secure additional local match. How much grant money we could apply for was controlled by how much local match we could raise. And in the last few weeks, we've found a way with our partners, PG and Pacific Core, to come up with slightly more money.
Great. Good to hear. Colleagues, any additional questions?
So I'm hearing that this was an adaptive solution so that we could actually engage more of our private partners in this collective effort.
That is correct.
Okay. Thought I'd help you frame that so it's easier to vote yes. Thanks.
Great. Colleagues, any additional questions or thoughts on these amendments? Hearing none, Megan, can you please call the roll on the amendments?
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Thank you, colleagues. As you know, I am not someone to bring last minute amendments, but the ability to get $5.5 million as compared to $4 million, I thought was compelling enough to bring these amendments forward. I am appreciative of your support. I vote aye.
Maps.
Aye. And do we have a staff presentation on the ordinance itself?
Yes, we do. Thank you, Kristen, and thanks for that prompt.
No problem. As we jump in, we will talk about the background and context for electrification and the smart grant application, give you some details on what we're applying for grant money to do, and answer any questions you might have. We also have some invited testimony today from those private sector partners and other community partners who have been engaged in the development of these grant applications. Before we jump in though, I would like to recognize a couple of staff people who have really gone above and beyond in making these grant applications happen. So Jacob Sherman, who you'll hear from later today, is our new mobility program manager at PBOT. And Hannah Morrison is a planner on our team. And Hannah won't be speaking with you today, but I wanted to make sure she got a little bit of recognition because she has been burning the midnight oil in order to get these applications done. They're always just a ton of work and a ton of benefit. So next slide. So I want to just remind us that we have policy mandates in the city to advance electrification as part of our transportation system. Our climate emergency calls for increased attention to electrification, particularly transportation electrification. We have a 2017 City of Portland adopted electric vehicle strategy, and our QBOT strategic plan has a strong focus on electrification of vehicle miles traveled. Next slide, please. QBOT does have a three-pronged strategy to advance transportation climate justice. On part of that is really around how we encourage people to make more trips by biking, walking, and transit. So those are ways to reduce vehicle miles driven. And that happens through the kinds of facilities we plan and build, the kinds of policy and pricing incentives we have in place, how we activate and encourage folks to make different choices on our system. We know, however, that there will be some trips that remain in cars and trucks. And for those, we want to help shift drivers to cleaner fuels and cleaner vehicles. And that's the part of the triangle we're going to be talking about today. We know that we'll need to take action in all three parts of this triangle in order to meet our goals of reducing transportation-related greenhouse gas emissions by 50% by 2030 and net zero by 2050. And then it'll take a strong city role to make sure that those benefits are distributed equitably throughout our community. Next slide, please. So PBOT has done a lot of thinking over the last more than 3 years, the 3.5 years I've been at the city, and thinking about what our role in transportation electrification is and how we can help to advance the goals we have around shifting more drivers to electrified trips and how we do that in a way that reflects our commitment to equity. One thing that we've really realized we can do that's in the PBOT's lane, so to speak, is to think about how we encourage EV charging, particularly using the right-of-way for electric vehicle charging. This is a way we can fill market gaps and encourage the market to show up for all Portlanders, not just those in neighborhoods where there's already high levels of electric vehicle adoption. This also allows us to position Portland to receive federal funding. The Biden administration has made is making an unprecedented commitment to electric vehicle charging, and this is a way that we can capture some of that funding for Portlanders. PBOT can also send market signals and help to coordinate land use, state, and federal policy to make the regulatory environment for EV charging, particularly in the right-of-way, clearer and easier to understand. We can also partner with private sector partners to provide infrastructure and low-carbon mobility options. While we don't want to own, operate, maintain chargers, we can help make space available for those chargers, making them more likely to occur in a way that supports our equity goals. And we can also provide electric mobility options to Portlanders like e-bike town, e-scooters, and the streetcar. Finally, we can leverage our assets. So I've talked a lot about the public right-of-way. That is an asset PBOT has, and we want to think really carefully about how we leverage that to achieve goals like electrification. This is one part of that strategy. It's not the whole strategy, but you're gonna hear about a couple of things today that we want to do in this space. I'm gonna hand it to Ingrid Fish, who's a partner at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, to talk more about transportation electrification.
Hello, City Council members. As Kristen said, my name's Ingrid Fish. I work on work for BPS on transportation decarbonization policy, and I've partnered with PBOT staff on this grant and decarbonization efforts generally. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to the next couple of slides and give some context about the accessibility of EVs. So thankfully, EVs have been getting much more affordable over time. The cost of a used EV on the current Portland market is less than a comparable gas vehicle thanks to the availability of federal and state rebates. As you can see on this slide, it's comparing an electric vehicle and a comparable gas vehicle. And the electric vehicle is actually less expensive. And these cars are on the market as of a few days ago. EVs are also cheaper to own than internal combustion engine vehicles due to less expensive fuel and maintenance costs, especially now when gas prices are extremely high. Modeling shows that an EV owner can save an average of $6,000 over the vehicle's lifespan, which is especially significant for low-income residents. Next slide, please. Additionally, low-income residents tend to be disproportionately exposed to transportation-related air quality issues due to poorer neighborhoods' proximity to highways and busy corridors. Low-income communities can benefit the most from less air pollution and lower car ownership costs. So now that we're finally at this point in time where EVs are relatively affordable, we're finding that the lack of charging infrastructure is the next big barrier to address for increasing EV access to low-income households. Low-income people tend to disproportionately live in multifamily buildings or rent houses, and installing EV infrastructure into a house that you do not own is challenging and even more difficult and complex when you live in a multifamily building. Oftentimes, this means low-income families need to rely on publicly accessible charging infrastructure to fuel their electric vehicles. Publicly accessible charging infrastructure is typically more expensive than home charging and is less likely to be located in lower-income neighborhoods. Charging companies typically install public chargers in higher-income neighborhoods and use information such as historical rates of hybrid ownership and income level to inform their charging location installation plans. Oftentimes, this means that private sector EV charging installations skip over lower income neighborhoods, resulting in less access to publicly accessible charging stations for BIPOC and low income Portlanders. Now I'm going to hand it over to Jacob Sherman, who will talk a bit more about our plans to address this issue.
Thanks, Ingrid. Thank you, Council President Mapps and Commissioners. My name is Jacob Sherman. I work at the Portland Bureau of Transportation. And as Ingrid was saying, you know, unfortunately in our city, current availability of public electric vehicle charging is not equitable today. Market-driven installations are not distributed kind of equally around the city as represented in the map on the right. The areas in gray are our land use centers where we have designated most of the growth to occur in our city, and those in red as well, and those in gray are centers that currently have access to public EV charging, and those in red are areas that currently lack any access whatsoever as of today. And so as we are thinking about how we support growth and how we create more multi-unit dwellings with little to no on-site parking, where those people are going to be able to charge their electric vehicles becomes kind of a key problem. And that is one of the solutions we're trying to tackle through this grant. And I think it's important to also note, thinking about especially residents who live further to the north or further to the east, who are more likely to continue relying on personal vehicles in the near term, because options like safe biking or rapid transit just aren't available right now. And so an equity focus really calls us to think about electrifying those places first. Which takes us to our first grant here today. This is just over $3 million grant to the U.S. Department of Energy, focused on providing overnight charging options to people who live in multi-unit dwellings or lack access to home charging. This is based off of some innovative pilot work we've been doing with Portland General Electric and would like to thank them on, to develop kind of a low-cost, scalable program that will install up to 50 level 2 chargers in the right-of-way. And a big part of the work is not just about charging, it's also doing community outreach and engagement. It's also doing kind of robust third-party evaluation and documenting the best practices that we as a city, alongside our private sector partners, have really been innovating on, and then sharing those lessons learned with the nation. We're making a commitment in this grant to install 40% of the chargers in or near disadvantaged communities. This aligns directly with President Biden's Justice 40 initiative. And we're going to work hard to reduce barriers to EV adoption. We have a great set of partners on this grant. Both Portland General Electric and PacifiCorp are providing substantial match. Since putting these slides together, the match has been increased to over $1 million, and we'd like to thank them for that. We're also working with the Oregon Department of Transportation for the Portland State University and more. And this is an example of what it might look like if we're successful with this grant. You can imagine kind of on the lower right-hand corner, kind of one of our main streets in some of our areas, whether that's Division or Hawthorne or Kenton, having charging kind of accessible around the corner from some of those busier parts of our city to provide access to charging overnight for individuals. This grant is going to address some of the barriers that Ingrid and I have both talked about in terms of home charging is more affordable, and working with our partners, we're going to be providing affordable opportunities here. We're going to be working to make it more reliable for people living in apartments or in homes that they rent to be able to charge. Increasing access, so all Portlanders will have the ability to benefit from electrification. And then again, providing lessons learned to other cities around the United States. So our grant is due next week. If we're successful, we would learn that in January of the new year, and then would be returning to City Council sometime in early to mid 2023 for approval to accept the grant. Our second grant that we're here getting approval for is really focused on the goal of making freight cleaner, which is action items that we have outlined as a city in our climate emergency work plan. And we have also engaged on very heavily in our 2040 freight plan that is kind of in the development and adoption process. As many of us know, transportation is a significant amount of the greenhouse gas emissions in our city. Freight plays a role in that. And in addition to those greenhouse gas emissions, dirty diesel also contributes to kind of harmful air pollution that disproportionately impacts low income and communities of color. The U.S. Department of Transportation has launched its Smart Grant Initiative, and this is focused on kind of purpose-driven innovation to try and solve established community needs. There is an application open for these phase one planning and prototype grants with up to $2 million. No local match is required. And applications are due on November 18th, and we're working on that diligently right now. If we're successful with that phase one planning and prototyping grant, we would then be eligible for a phase two implementation grants of up to $15 million over 3 years. Our grant is focused on testing strategies to reduce freight emissions by building kind of internal capacity and technology systems to digitize some of our curb rules. Currently, the curb is kind of regulated and managed through physical signage, but more and more technology and logistics companies, they rely on apps and other digital rules. And so creating the ability to better communicate with the private sector and better monitor curb use at select sites. We would test out some zero emission loading zones where we would change our truck loading zones to be eligible for zero emission types of vehicles, whether that's an electric box truck or an e-trike. And then we'd be exploring curb reservation systems, which is another kind of innovation that other cities are looking at right now. And ultimately, we'd be evaluating the outcome of this pilot, recommending new regulations or incentives, and then if successful, going after competing for one of these phase two grants. So in terms of next steps and questions, again, our grants are due very soon. One grant is due next week, the other is shortly thereafter. We had learned about the status of both of these applications in early 23. And speaking of 23, both the Bureau of Transportation as well as Planning and Sustainability also have two EV charging related kind of policy projects that we plan to bring to council in early 23. So with that, I want to thank you for the time. Again, thank our private sector partners and open it up for any questions from council as well as our invited testimony.
Colleagues, any questions at this point? I do have some questions just about the details of this program, but why don't we do invited testimony first and then we'll do some dialogue before the final vote. Keelan, do we have, let's go to invited testimony first. Or Megan, I apologize.
We have one individual signed up for public testimony, Joshua McNanamously.
Let me check with staff. Is that the testimony you were expecting?
Kristen, do we have other people that we invited to testify?
We do. We have invited testimony as well. Jacob, do you want to give you order?
Yes, please.
Yes, we have invited testimony from Portland General Electric, from Forth, as well as from Climate Solutions.
Megan, let's call the invited testimony first.
That sounds good.
Okay, proceed. Do we have them in chambers or online?
They're online, Commissioner.
Okay, great. Here, why don't we have staff introduce your invited testimony? Who's up first?
Thank you, Commissioner Mapps. I'd like to invite Alicia Lawrence from Portland General Electric up first.
Thank you, Jacob. Thank you, Council. I'm Alicia Lawrence, and I'm the Senior Manager of Transportation Electrification here at Portland General Electric. I am happy to be joining in on this grant to help expand electrification within the city of Portland. PGE has had a long partnership with the city of Portland by already having assets in the right-of-way, and this is now a new novel use of being able to use those utility poles to help expand the use of charging infrastructure to be more equitable for individuals who won't have access to a garage or a driveway and still deserve to be part of our electric transformation to help meet our community's decarbonization goals. As stated, one of our biggest goals is in making sure that anyone can charge equitably wherever they need to charge, and that it can be at a rate that is equitable. So being able to charge at home is very affordable. We have a tariff in place that also makes sure that public charging at PGE-owned chargers is also at an equitable rate compared to the residential rate that someone would charge if they were able to charge their vehicle at home. This is what we are committing to being able to do is by providing infrastructure of 40 chargers within our service territory within the city of Portland, which is a matching grant of over $600,000 in infrastructure, along with additional money and labor and to support the work over the next 3 years as well. So that is the role of Portland General Electric, and we're happy to be able to be partners and to be able to help move this grant forward with the DOE.
Great, thank you, Ms. Lawrence. Any questions from Ms. Lawrence, colleagues? Commissioner Ryan, I see an inquisitive look on your face.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here, Alyssa. My question is, you spoke about equitable payments. So could you break that down? Just give us like a concrete dollar figure on what it's like for a resident and then what that fair and equitable price would be for someone that uses one of these expanding infrastructure amenities that we will be producing.
Yeah, I'd be more than happy to. So there's a residential rate schedule, I'll just call it Schedule 7, what it is, and that has about a 12 cent per kilowatt hour rate at a residential home. When we looked at that, we looked at the type of charging that we're doing here, and we charge $3 for a 4-hour time frame at a level 2 charger, which is equitable. So as we went through the different tariff rulings with the PUC, of being able to show that math to be able to show it's equitable to that around 12 cent per kilowatt hour rate that we would charge that a residential customer is charged, and then how that is equitable to the amount of kilowatt hours that would be used during that time frame.
Thank you. I don't think about kilowatt hours very often, but I was able to track what you're saying. Thanks.
Great. Why don't we continue with invited testimony? Who's up next?
Thank you, Commissioner Mapps. I'd like to invite Jeanette Shaw from 4th.
Welcome, Ms. Shaw.
Great. Thank you very much. Good morning, Council President, Commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Jeanette Shaw. I am a director of policy and a lobbyist at 4th, as well as a city councilor in the city of Tigard, Oregon.
Oh, great.
My comments today are on behalf of 4th, and I use she, her pronouns. I'm here to support the item of 9/11, PBOT's Park and Charge proposal to the United States Department of Energy's Vehicle Technology Office. 4th was founded in 2011, and it was founded here in Oregon. Our mission is to electrify transportation by bringing together to create solutions that reduce pollution as well as barriers to access. And we do that through a number of different programs and policies that increase access to charging, access to cars, access to emerging modes, as well as e-bikes, electric school buses, and electric tractors. We believe that bringing new transportation technologies to traditionally underserved communities is critical to the success of the overall industry and will also maximize the economic and environmental benefits of these technologies. In 2017, 4th worked with the Oregon legislature to pass the Oregon Clean Vehicle Rebate Program. This established a standard electric vehicle rebate program, as well as a charge ahead electric vehicle rebate for low to moderate income Oregonians, and a program that has and is being replicated across the United States. By 2015, more than 100 EV models are going to be available, and this is according to the Environmental Defense Fund. This wide range of new models, along with tax credits from the Inflation Reduction Act that Ingrid had mentioned, and rebate programs like Oregon's Charge Ahead Rebate, will make EVs much more affordable in the immediate years to come. But without convenient and affordable charging options nearby, many of our communities will still face barriers to access. Most folks who live in cities do not have access to a garage or even a driveway. And the cost to install a private EV charger can cost upwards of thousands of dollars. Sufficient public charging infrastructure is going to be essential to increase access to electric vehicles. And a recent survey by Atlas Public Policy found that over $87 billion in charging infrastructure investment will be needed in the United States really over the next decade. And that in the report in 2035, the report researchers from the Goldman School of Public Policy at the University of California, Berkeley, estimate that up to 25% of EV drivers will be relying completely on public charging. Without the public and private charging infrastructure investment, historically underserved communities may be excluded in this EV adoption process. Affordable, convenient, and accessible curbside charging is a way that can make the shift to EVs much more equitable. And for that reason, Forth strongly supports PBOT's Park and Charge proposal to the Department of Energy's Vehicle Technology Office. We look forward to working alongside the city to convene and lead workshops with community-based organizations for public engagement to support education and outreach of charging infrastructure, and to communicate equitable and affordable best practices that come from this project with decision makers and planners nationwide. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Shaw. I believe there should be one additional person for invited testimony. Is that correct?
That is correct. Thank you, Commissioner Mapps. I'd like to invite up Victoria Paycar from Climate Solutions.
Welcome, Victoria.
Thank you. Good morning, City of Portland Commissioners. For the record, my name is Victoria Pinkar, and I'm the Oregon Transportation Policy Manager at Climate Solutions, and we're a regional nonprofit working to accelerate clean energy solutions to the climate crisis. And I'm here today to voice our support for PBOT's EV charging in the right-of-way code project and an opportunity to take advantage of these great federal grants. 2 years ago, Climate Solutions published a report called Transforming Our Transportation, which found that in order to meet our climate goals, we must both electrify our transportation system without delay and pair it with reducing vehicle miles traveled in order to achieve the biggest social and climate benefits, such as health and air quality improvements, especially for low-income and BIPOC communities who are disproportionately burdened by air pollution, as well as reduce transportation cost burden and address the climate crisis. Specifically, the research showed that we cannot succeed without electrifying about 97% of all vehicles and all vehicle types by 2050, as well as about a 27% on average vehicle miles traveled reductions. For cities like Portland, we projected a need for at least a 47% reduction in vehicle miles traveled. In short, this means that we have a lot of work to do, and these grants will certainly help. The level two charging in the right-of-way has been proven successful by the pilot program that PGE started a couple years ago and that was shared. Now we have the opportunity to expand the service while also leading with an equity-centered approach by targeting benefits to communities most underserved by public charging infrastructure, as well as multimodal transportation options, and working with community members to figure out what transportation options are most needed and ensure their solutions are leading investment plans, decisions, and implementation as well. As Ingrid shared, public charging infrastructure remains one of the biggest barriers for people who do not have access to at-home charging, and installing full chargers in the right-of-way is an effective way for the city to ensure we are doing more to improve access for people who want to switch to an electric vehicle. The sharp spike in gas prices this summer, as you know, made it difficult for many lower-income community members who were dependent on their cars because of lack of accessible transit options from accessing economic opportunities such as work and school, as well as access to necessary services such as food, medical services, and more. And so this is another opportunity for PBOT to continue working to achieve affordable charging infrastructure relative to at-home charging. Supporting transportation means supporting access, and this is access to all essential, and that's access to all essential services that allow us to thrive. The best path forward is making transportation people-centered, providing equitable investments to under-invested in communities, prioritizing access to multimodal transportation options that are affordable, safe, and efficient, as well as electrifying the rest. While it's a lot, this means that every opportunity that helps to achieve both the electrification of vehicles and reducing vehicle miles traveled through interventions like public access to charging, to Vision Zero and people-centered cities should be supported. Thank you for the work you've done so far for Portland's transportation future, and let's keep going further. Thanks.
Thank you, Victoria. I believe that concludes invited testimony. Is that correct, staff?
That is correct. President Mapps, I just cannot leave this spot without thanking our invited guests for being here and partnering with us. Ms. Picard, Ms. Lawrence, Ms. Shaw, thank you. I want to say Ingrid and Kristen, there's a theme here that I just want to take a moment to appreciate. And Jacob, no disrespect to you, but the women are getting it done in transportation and are visionary and are pushing the envelope. And I just did not want to miss the opportunity to look at all these incredibly accomplished transportation experts who understand why these investments at this time are so critical. And Jacob, is always great to know that we've got good men who are also doing great work in transportation. But in this region, there are a lot of women that are pushing and leading this effort. And because of that, I just wanted to take a moment and just really appreciate what a beautiful picture. If I was there, I'd be taking a picture with all of you. Thank you for your partnership. Thank you for the investment. And thank you for the commitment to making sure that we all benefit as we move into this climate resilient future. Thank you.
Great.
Back to you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Megan, do we have any public testimony on this item?
One person signed up.
Great. Let's proceed to public testimony.
Joshua Magnanimously.
Ah, Joshua.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, my name is Joshua Magnanimously. Excuse me. You covered a lot of stuff, and there's like a lot of different perspectives that I just would like to touch base on.
Sure.
The first is the concrete guy. I also work for the union, not this union here, but the pay scale is completely off the way that you all would produce
Mr.
more.
I hate to interrupt. Mr. Magnanimously, I hate to interrupt you here, but we tried to limit public testimony to the item being discussed today. If you have any thoughts on item 9/11, or I will ask you to limit your comments to item 9/11.
Okay.
If you don't have any comments on 9/11, you're more than welcome to submit your written testimony to us, and we'll take a look at it when we get out of this session, or you could come back next.
Okay. Now, 9/11 is the guarantee on the money, correct?
That is the testimony that we've been listening to for about the last half hour about the PBOT grant
right. To
install public charging
stations. And that's also covered to the rights and the guarantees as well as the contract that was found that's found in there, correct?
I will refer to the clerk. We're talking about the PBOT item,
yes.
Which is.
Yes.
Yes. So if you have something to say about the PBOT item, which does two things, it will kind of sets up, it allows us to apply for grants that would both facilitate the creation of public charging stations for electric cars, and has a basket of innovative programs around clean freight. So that's what we're trying to educate ourselves on today before we cast this next vote.
This is just the contract and how I find the intellectual grab and the irrelevantly assignments of the agencies, the rights, the titles, the interest and the product, the creativity, the guaranteed underneath in this agreement allows the intellectual property in itself to be absorbed by the city, the state, as well as the country, and it will deprive the individual of royalties over rights and over what matters to them, the intellectual property, what they create, what they make, and what they contribute. So having this type of an agreement, this type of an amendment, it's at the Exhibit A, it's under the guaranteed rights, third-party rights. So by accepting these grants, any intellectual property that's the city absolutely absorbs, and the irrevocably assigned rights, agencies, titles, and the guarantee, I just find the irreversibility something to be cautious over, especially when people create and have intellectual property. As our society progresses, I think our morals digress. And unfortunately, if we keep on giving away our personal rights, our availability for royalties and for residuals and for long-term base economical growth, even for ourselves, we'll end up depriving people more than they already have. I just really strongly disagree with that type of framing in any agreement whatsoever, because who wants to, it's almost on the verge of a dictatorship when you would say, I would be having this right no matter what, I can duplicate it, I can do anything that I want to with it because it's mine. And this part of this agreement absolutely allows that type of a sanctioning to take place. So I would be interested in seeing a different type of a framing.
Great.
That doesn't allow the government to have such of an overreach on personal people, their intellectual property, their rights, and their abilities as a free, independent American citizen.
Great. Thank you very much for those comments. Megan, do we have any more public testimony?
That concludes public testimony.
Great. Colleagues, before we vote on this, do you have any questions or observations you'd like to share? No? No? Actually, I have one question for staff, and this is a friendly question. Well, actually, Commissioner Ryan has his hands up. Do you want to go?
Yeah. Actually, while you're here, I was thinking about, it was about a year ago maybe, there was a station that we were putting in out at Mount Tabor, I believe. And I just wanted to hear an update on how that's going.
Sure, thanks, Commissioner Ryan. That is, from my understanding, that's some work that City Fleet has been taking the lead on in terms of installing some chargers to benefit kind of the city's public fleet. I believe those chargers are not accessible to the public and they're just restricted to our vehicles. I think we would probably have to follow up with City Fleet to get you an accurate update where things are, but I do know they've been making progress.
Okay, so the Mount Tabor electrification station is for City Fleet only, not for public. So,
correct.
Okay, but it's so great to have this kind of dialogue, the transparent dialogue, so we can track what's just for the City Fleet and what's for the public. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Ryan. And I have a question, and I'll keep you on deck, and you can decide how to redistribute the question if you're not the right expert on this. First, let me start out by saying thanks to Commissioner Hardesty, and thanks to staff and our partners in the private sector for bringing forward this really innovative package of reforms and innovations, which will lead us towards our green economy. And this stuff is so new, I'd kind of, frankly, a lot of it's new to me, and I'm still trying to figure out how this works. And I'll let me say up front, the clean freight stuff is so new that I kind of learned about it for the first time today. If we get this grant, I definitely would appreciate a deeper briefing on what's happening in this space. And then just to do a little bit of public education, let's focus on the first part of the grant though. Public charging stations, or public using the public right-of-way for charging stations for electric vehicles. We see these kind of pop up around the neighborhoods. I haven't thought very deeply about how the micro mechanics of this work. And I'm kind of wondering, and I heard today the city won't actually be operating the charging station. So we'll have some private sector or nonprofit partners there. And I think this occurs, this makes me realize, I don't think I understand the business model here. You know, in some ways I think of these spaces as almost being kind of the next generation of gas stations and whatnot. And I suspect that's probably not quite the right metaphor. But what is the business model for who runs these? Like, who ultimately pays for the electricity? And from a PBOT perspective, is this kind of like a parking space, or is this a different thing happening here? Like, we have rules for how long you can stay in a parking space, but I assume we don't want people just randomly using charging stations. All this is quite new, and I just literally don't have much intuition about what the basic rules of the game are, or what kind of business we're trying to build here. So I'll start with you, Jake. Well, looks like Kristen has taken herself off mute. Do you want to start us off?
Yeah, I was just going to say that Jacob is the right person to answer the detailed questions, but we will be coming to council in early 2023 with a full package of code amendments that will detail the right-of-way charging program that our team is working very hard to develop. So I'll let Jacob give you the overview, but we will have a chance to dig into the details of how right-of-way charging works a bit more in the winter.
Awesome. Hey, Jacob, do you have anything to add? You don't have, since we have a big briefing coming, you don't have to be super in-depth here, but I think myself, and I'm sure members of the public, would love to learn more about how this space works.
Yeah. Thanks, Commissioner Mapps, for the question. You know, there's currently, I think it's about 100 and just over 160 public chargers located within the city of Portland. I think as you heard from some of the testimony, we expect that need to grow substantially over the next few years. And, you know, how we're thinking about structuring the program is essentially, and through this grant, as well as probably in the future, is thinking about opportunities to mount electric vehicle chargers onto existing utility poles, sign and stripe those, create parking regulations around that. And then in terms of the business model, you know, at the end of the day, the consumer is the person paying for the electricity as they're kind of fueling their vehicle, mostly in that location where, you know, they don't have on-site access to chargers. And some of the fast chargers and other private networks that are out there are very expensive. And so as we kind of discuss, some of what we're looking at here is trying to provide that more affordable option, and particularly provide those options in parts of the city that the market is not serving today. So that's maybe a very high level overview. And I think, you know, before we come to council early next year, we'd be happy to provide you a deeper briefing on some of these topics.
Great. I won't take more time unpacking that today. I have plenty of questions, but they're all friendly questions. I am excited about the direction we're heading in with this ordinance. Colleagues, are there any additional questions before we call the roll? Nope. Okay. Megan. This is an emergency ordinance. Please call the roll.
Rubio?
I want to thank Commissioner Hardesty for bringing this forward and her leadership here, as well as Kristen and Jacob and Ingrid for all your work on these applications, and also to our invited testimony for their important words today. This is a really great opportunity for Portland, and it really helps significantly move us forward to meet our climate goals. And electrification is such a foundational strategy in the transition. And I really, really want to just lift up and appreciate how it's designed to not leave anyone, or this proposal is designed to not leave anyone behind by ensuring equitable access to all parts of our city. So very excited and look forward to seeing the results of this work. I vote aye.
Brian?
Yeah, I'd like to add also that I want to thank Commissioner Hardesty for bringing this forward. I also want to, although a bit jarring, that the amendments, it was great that you had invited testimony that affirmed the right and left hand are communicating with each other and that we're all on the same page and aligning arrows to actually build this much needed infrastructure. I also look forward to the dialogue we have in early. I'm being an optimist right now that you'll get the award, and thank you. Who's doing the grant writing again? Those are the hardest jobs. So Kristen, you were kind enough to acknowledge some of your colleagues that have been doing the federal grant writing, and I want to acknowledge them as well. Those are brutal assignments. And let's hope that we can leverage these investments and then leverage them further with our private investment. And then hear about the planning, because you know we're building, and building is exciting, and it's never perfect, but we have to keep asking the kind of questions that Commissioner Mapps just put on the dais as we figure out how to do this right. And so I'm all in, and let's hope that we are here in early 2023 celebrating the fact that we have these investments, and then we can actually imagine and get creative about what good planning looks like so that it is truly equitable. I vote aye.
Hardesty?
First, again, I want to thank Kristen, Jacob, and Ingrid for an incredible job, and Chris Warner for his leadership of PBOT, which is absolutely stellar. I am very grateful to our community partners who put their money where their mouth is, because, you know, we hear about partnerships all the time that don't come with dollars attached to them. So I am very grateful that we're all in this together, and I have every confidence that we will be awarded these grants, and we will continue to think big about how we build the climate resilient future that we all say we want. And I have to say, I am always impressed with the quality of the work that PBOT does. But this is going to put us once again in a national leadership role of how we make investments and who do we make those investments for. So I'm happy to vote aye, and I look forward to the results.
Mapps.
I want to thank Commissioner Hardesty and PBOT for bringing this item forward. I also appreciate both the staff testimony that we received today and the invited testimony and the public testimony that we heard. I find this grant proposal to be innovative and exciting. I hope that we get it, and I look forward to learning more about this space. I vote aye. 9-11 passes. Colleagues, we will continue with our time certain items. Megan, will you please read item 912?
Amend the comprehensive plan map and zoning map for property at 4928 Northeast 11th Avenue at the request of Allison Reynolds, Stoll Reeves, LLP, LU21-098835 CPZC.
Thank you, Megan. Colleagues, I believe the findings for this ordinance have been updated to reflect the testimony we heard and the discussion we had when this item came before us on Thursday, October 6th. Commissioner Ryan, do you have anything else that you want to add to the record before we do a vote here?
Ready to go on.
Great.
Second reading.
Yeah. Hearing no further questions and no desire for further dialogue, I will ask Megan to please call the roll.
Rubio?
Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Mapps?
Aye. Item 912 passes. Colleagues, now why don't we go to the consent agenda? Megan, have any items been pulled off the consent agenda?
Item 914.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, 914 has been pulled off the consent agenda. Can we call the roll on the rest of the on the rest of the consent?
Rubio?
Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Mapps?
Aye. And at the end of this meeting, we will come back and address 914. Colleagues, we are now on to the regular agenda. Megan, will you please read 924?
Authorize intergovernmental agreement with Portland State University to design and execute a summit in early 2023 on equitable civic engagement and co-governance Governance for an amount not to exceed $108,850.
Colleagues, this is a second reading. Is there any further discussion on this item? Seeing none, Megan, please call the roll.
Rubio?
Aye.
Ryan?
Yeah, I want to acknowledge a great meeting I had this week with Director Montoya. Thank you so much for taking the time. It was helpful for me to get a level set on what this actually is. And, you know, I think what I appreciate about the dialogue is how we're, you know, relationships move at the speed of trust. And I know that the more we allow our neighborhood associations to engage with these steps, I know this is a planning for a planning for a planning. So I was educated on the process that we're in. I think getting the website updated with the neighborhood profiles, that was very important. Those are up today. I'm looking non-verbally. So those are up today on the website for Civic Life. So I encourage all neighborhood association members to click on their neighborhood and see the good work that's foundational and very helpful, not just to the neighborhoods that have this information, but for the entire city to have a database that gets to some of the very important demographic information that we need throughout the city. So I was really pleased to see that development. I look forward to hearing how each neighborhood association is engaged in this process as we move forward, and I vote aye.
Hardesty?
I want to thank Director Montoya for his thoughtfulness and moving this proposal forward. To the comments of Commissioner Ryan, he may be unaware that every neighborhood association was reached out to 3 times in preparation for this this agreement. There's been already a great deal of outreach, and we'll continue to do that because guess what? That's what Civic Life's job is to actually engage with the neighborhoods and others to ensure that community voices are incorporated into city policy decision-making. And so I vote aye, but just wanted to make sure that was clarified.
Maps?
Yeah, I want to thank Commissioner Hardesty and Civic Life for agreeing to move this item and the next item we're going to hear onto regular agenda. I think that provided council and the people of Portland to take an opportunity to learn more about what Civic Life is trying to do here. I support the direction you're going in, and for these reasons and more, I vote aye. 924 passes. Colleagues, we will continue with the regular agenda. Can we read, Megan, will you please read 925?
Authorize intergovernmental agreement with Portland State University to expand and improve the Neighborhood Profiles Project for an amount not to exceed $61,250.
This is the second reading. Colleagues, any further discussion on this item? Hearing none, Megan, please call the roll.
Rubio?
Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Maps?
I'm going to vote aye on this. I'm glad to see the data portion of this project move forward. I think this is very valuable. I'm the kind of public employee who actually goes to these pages fairly frequently. If I had any feedback, I've looked at the data that you plan to partner with PSU to get. I would also point out that, especially since I've been on council, we've been trying to push as many city bureaus as possible to set up dashboards, which contain kind of real-time information. And I hope we can explore kind of importing some of that real-time dashboard information into the neighborhood profiles. I think that would make this important project even that more valuable. For these reasons and more, I vote aye. 925 passes. Colleagues, I believe we have one item which has been pulled from the consent agenda. Megan, can you read that title?
Item 914, authorized director of the Community Safety Division to execute grant agreements for gun violence reduction programs.
Great. Colleagues, I believe this has been pulled back to the mayor's office. Is that correct, Megan?
Yes, the item has been referred back to the mayor's office.
Great. So we will be hearing that item in the future. And with that, I believe that completes our business for this morning. Megan, is that correct?
That's correct.
Colleagues, we are adjourned. Thank you so much.